It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is VSiN's College Basketball Betting Podcast. Here is your host, Tim Murray.
Welcome in, everyone. Another edition of the VSiN College Basketball Betting Podcast. We just had one the other day with myself, Tim Murray, and Matt Humans. And now we welcome in Adam Burke at Skating Tripods on Twitter in the flesh. It's always nice to do these together. We are sitting in a site, not this particular site, but the city that will be hosting one of the regionals. Las Vegas will get the West Regional semifinals and finals on Thursday and Saturday night. Adam, I don't want to belabor too much of what we saw because this is a betting podcast. We're moving forward, but just a couple nuggets or biggest takeaways from the first weekend.
Well, a lot of takeaways. I mean, a lot of runs, you know, a lot of bad three-point shooting. That's the reason why we've had so many unders here in this tournament. A lot of teams just have not shot well from distance. I don't know if it's the neutral sites or if it's something else, but, you know, a lot of games that have gone under the total, obviously. A lot of slow starts, first half unders continue to be pretty good bets. But, you know, a few just kind of macro takeaways here. You know, once again, not a great look for the Mountain West. You know, I mean, San Diego State, they did not play terribly well against Charleston. They ran into Furman. Who knows if that game would have gone differently if they had played Virginia. But other than that, I mean, Utah State, they couldn't make it three to save their lives against Missouri. Boise State looked bad against Northwestern. They had 67 points despite 20 offensive rebounds. So that's a really, really bad look there for the Broncos. So, you know, that conference really struggling. I guess not, that's not that big of a surprise. The other one is, you know, I mean, you know, coaching means so much in the NCAA tournament. And here we go again. Matt Painter, you know, I mean, Zach Edey doesn't score for the last six plus minutes of that game. Fairleigh Dickinson made adjustments before the game that Purdue just didn't counter. So, you know, coaching matters a lot in the NCAA tournament. And this year has been evidence of that once again.
Yeah. A lot of three pointers from Purdue, which is a great thing considering they suck at shooting three pointers. So
it's always a good strategy.
Yeah. Back to three straight years of exits to 16, 15 and 13. For the Boilermakers, so another early exit, man. The jokes that were flying on Friday following Virginia's early departure, and, you know, I just had to laugh. I put out a tweet, got a lot of response regarding how many fan bases would take the last decade of UVA basketball, because what they have that Purdue doesn't is they won a national championship. I know they lost to a 16 seed, as Purdue has now done, and they've lost to back-to-back 13 seeds. But at the end of the day, people, I think, fail to realize, you know, the national championship came after the UMBC loss. Like, that just gets lost. Oh, they lost to the UMBC. Yeah, then they won the title the next year. That's the goal, right? Winning the title, but we don't have to defend Virginia's honor here on this podcast. I was on Furman, so I was happy with the result. Crazy ending, certainly. And that was interesting, too, because, Adam, we talked about on this podcast some long shots that I had, and I took Memphis to come out of the region. Both you and I thought that Purdue was very vulnerable. You had FAU beating Purdue. I had Memphis beating Purdue. And ultimately, you look at Kihei Clark with the errant pass against Furman, and then Kendrick Davis late in that game against FAU with the pass. So veteran guards just getting caught up in the moment. And, you know, we always talk so much about veteran guard play, but, you know, we saw some big-time players, like a Tucker DeVries of Drake. In these one-game situations, sometimes you're just not hitting. Tucker DeVries, 1-for-13 and 1-of-10 from three in Drake's collapse against Miami.
So two things, and baseball is kind of on the brain here because I've written all my MLB team previews over at VSiN.com, and the VSiN Daily Baseball Bets podcast begins coming up here on Monday. But with baseball on the brain, I mean, you mentioned the Virginia thing. I mean, you were tweeting about it again this week, that Nationals World Series you got in 2019.
Yeah. Like, it's all that matters.
That flag flies forever. That banner hangs forever. I mean, hey, for Virginia, you know, to be at the top of the mountain once and trade that for some of the other things that have happened, you absolutely take that. And the other thing is, I mean, you think about the Los Angeles Dodgers last year, who were just absurdly good, right? They had a losing record against four teams last year. The Guardians, the Mets, the Phillies, and the Pittsburgh Pirates. And they went 1-5. In their six games against the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are an awful team. The moral of this story, in a one-game sample, virtually anything can happen.
Yep.
So, you know, you're a great team during the regular season, but you may run into a bad matchup, you run into a bad shooting day, whatever the case may be. I think it's really unfair to judge any team just on championships because shit happens, frankly. I mean, that's the only way I can put it, and it's happened to Purdue. It's happened to Virginia. You know, it's happened to Duke before with some of the games that they've lost. It just is what it is in this format where, you know, you have an off day and there's no tomorrow. So it's going to happen. It's going to happen to teams here in the Sweet 16, too.
Well, and I'd just like to point out, you know, because everybody likes to crap on Gonzaga, who has yet to win a championship. They've been to two of them. Hey, Dopes, this is now their eighth consecutive Sweet 16. So I know they played nobody from January to March, but magically, Adam, they've made it to eight consecutive Sweet 16s, which is now the fourth longest streak in the history of the NCAA tournament. Let's get to Thursday's game, which includes Gonzaga and UCLA. We'll go in chronological order. You know, I gave out my plays on the previous podcast. I'll still, you know, put in my two cents here on these games. But in chronological order, it starts with Michigan State and Kansas State. I think this is such a unique matchup here where you've got the seventh seed in Michigan State as the favorite now over Kansas State. Total consensus at 137.5. This game will be taking place at Madison Square Garden, Adam. Michigan State impressively taking down Marquette, even though they didn't shoot well, which I think is something that's being overlooked. This is a team that doesn't shoot a ton of threes, but when they shoot them at a very high clip, top 10 in the country. So the other, you know, nugget in this one, Marquise Noel, who went off against Kentucky, he is from the Bronx. He has never played at Madison Square Garden, which is kind of a unique wrinkle. Does he go Kemba Walker here and just carry Kansas State to a victory and then some? Or does he get a little overzealous, you know, playing in the Mecca there? So Michigan State, Kansas State, Tom Izzo, I believe Chris Felica tweeted out that Tom Izzo in the Elite Eight and the Sweet 16 straight up is 18-6, which is a pretty darn good record. What do you see in this? Is there a play that you have in Michigan State, Kansas State?
Great record, but I mean, I don't think this Michigan State team is all that good. I mean, honestly, I faded them against Marquette, and I paid the price for that one, but I mean, Marquette just, they didn't play well in that game. And
Tyler Kolek was not right.
He wasn't good. I mean, they were turning the ball over. They had long scoring droughts, all kinds of things like that. A few things about this game. I do like Kansas State. I liked Kansas State in my early lines piece over at VSiN.com right when the Sweet 16 was finalized. I don't agree with this line move going up to two. I understand, you know, Izzo and March. You don't bet against Izzo and March. If I get burned again, I get burned again. It is what it is. But, look, I mean, a couple of things here. You mentioned this game at Madison Square Garden. MSG is historically an under venue for college basketball. It's a very, very big space. It's a tough shooting backdrop. Michigan State, they kind of have to rely on the three because they're so good at shooting threes, whereas Kansas State can get to the rim. And they held opponents to just 29.7% on three-point shots. So I don't really think this is a great matchup for Michigan State. Kansas State is a team that, you know, they force turnovers. We'll see if they do a better job of that than Marquette did. Kansas State's a better offensive rebounding team. They're a better two-point shooting team. They'll probably try to push this tempo a little bit. And I think Jerome Tang has done a phenomenal job in his first year there in Manhattan. So I like Kansas State to pull a little upset here.
All right, you're on Kansas State in this spot. We go chronologically, so we jump over to Las Vegas here and T-Mobile Arena, where Arkansas will be taking on UConn. A little bit of a line move here, Adam. This thing opened 4, has dipped down to 3.5. Starting to see some juiced 3.5s. Actually, one offshore IC has a 4 here as of record on Tuesday afternoon. A game that I have not bet either. I do have a couple bets in the night games. I've been looking at Arkansas because of this, the talent that's on that roster. But, you know, I thought this was interesting from Seth Davis when he did his kind of preview of the Sweet 16. Just wondering out loud, has Eric Musselman kind of moved on from Nick Smith? Nick Smith, who will be a lottery pick, was a highly, highly recruited player. 2 of 10 against Illinois. Scoreless against Kansas in 16 minutes. And this was the quote, and I mentioned this with humans. There was much elation in the Razorbacks locker room, but Smith went into the bathroom and cried out of frustration. So what does that mean? Does Nick Smith bounce back? If so, I might like Arkansas a little bit more. We know about Eric Musselman's history in the NCAA tournament. He's had a lot of success. And then you look at UConn. UConn really played well, beat St. Mary's by 15, but shot quality actually graded the game out as a 10-point win for St. Mary's, believe it or not. How do you see this game? Is there a play that you have in UConn and Arkansas? Total of 140, UConn laying 3.5 at T-Mobile Arena.
I think this is arguably the most difficult game to try and handicap here for the Sweet 16 because you have this UConn team, metrics darling, mm-hmm. all year long, right? They've
top
had great numbers in terms of offensive and defensive efficiency. They actually fit the profile of being a team capable of winning it all because they're top 20 in both efficiency metrics. Obviously, they've had some losses. They've had some issues. They haven't played well in some of their games. But, I mean, this is a team that's second in the nation in offensive rebounding percentage. It's a team that's top 50 in two-point percentage, top 65 in three-point percentage. And that may be the big difference in this game is that UConn is a much better outside shooting team than Arkansas is. So that may ultimately be the difference here in this game. The question, of course, is I think the coaching matchup here where, you know, you've got a guy in Dan Hurley where people have kind of questioned his coaching ability in big games. I mean, UConn is a team here that was 3-4 during the regular season in quadrant 1A games. Obviously, they've had, you know, their share of disappointments in terms of postseason play. And, you know, I just look at Eric Musselman and his teams just perform at the right time at the highest level. So really tricky game where I think the metrics really point towards UConn, but kind of everything else about the handicap throws some question into that.
And the biggest thing I wonder about this game is Arkansas, they'll get after you defensively. For Arkansas, they're a team that's, you know, top 15 in defensive efficiency. They turn you over at a pretty decent clip. And UConn doesn't really have a point guard. So they've got tremendous size, obviously, with Sanogo, who has been tremendous. And then they come off the bench with the 7-2 guy clinging. Their wings are big. They'll get after the offensive glass. But I wonder if Arkansas, kind of what we saw against Gonzaga last year, where they'll bring the pressure on you, if they can pressure this UConn team just to make them feel a bit uncomfortable. So that's something that I would keep an eye on here. I would look a little bit towards the dog here, but no play for me in this one yet. A game that I have played is the second game at Madison Square Garden, Florida Atlantic taking on Tennessee. And Florida Atlantic, their run to the Sweet 16, they get a last-second bucket against Memphis, much to my chagrin. They win 66-65, and then as a massive favorite against Fairleigh Dickinson, didn't really play all that well, but ultimately pulled away and beat FDU 78-70. As for Tennessee, holds on for dear life against Louisiana Lafayette, Adam, and then in the most biggest overreaction spot of the tournament, Duke gets laying 3.5. The world is on Duke, and Tennessee bullies them. They play their style of play. They make the freshmen and the youngsters on Duke feel uncomfortable. They make some big shots. They go 9 of 21 from 3, which is 9% better than their season average. And here they are, Tennessee sitting in the Sweet 16. Rick Barnes gets the cover, but he's still 3-14 ATS in his last 17 NCAA tournament games. I'm on the dog here. I was able to grab a 6. They might come back. We'll see. But mostly 5.5s out there. So for the podcast purpose, 5.5. You know, I'm just a big believer, Adam, at you know, what you do over a long stretch of time is what you truly are. So, you know, FAU is a team that shot 37% from 3 as a team. But in their 2 NCAA tournament games so far, as you alluded to with the poor three-point shooting just all around, FAU was one of them. 28.8% as a team, 8 for 28 against Memphis, 9 for 31 against FDU. And then Tennessee shoots above their skis in that second round game. Well, they went 4 of 16 from 3 against Louisiana Lafayette. And I do love the fact that the roles have been reversed here, that FAU was this, you know, oh, you're playing FDU, you're the favorite, you know, you should crush them. And the pressure kind of sunk in. Tennessee was this underdog, hey, we'll just, no one believes in us role. Those have reversed now. Tennessee is plus 130 at DraftKings to win this region. They are now the favorite to win the East region. I think the pressure's back on them. This is an FAU team that goes incredibly deep, one of the deepest teams in the country. They'll go 9 deep. Jonell Davis is playing out of his mind. He had 23 points in the FDU game. I'm taking the points with FAU. I wouldn't be surprised if they won this game outright on Thursday night against Tennessee.
Yeah, I can't argue with anything that you said there. I mean, you know, look, and for Rick Barnes, we still don't really know what John Shire is. And I guess to a degree, we don't really know what Dusty May is either. But the fact that Fort Atlantic's been so good this year makes me think that guy's got some coaching chops, especially because they weren't really picked to do much of anything in Conference USA. And, you know, here they are with 33 wins as they head into the Sweet 16. A few things about this game I think are pretty interesting. The first is, you know, as you said, Tennessee kind of overperforming from three. This has been a bad team from three throughout the course of the season, and yet they have no interest in changing it up. They have no interest in doing anything differently, despite being, you know, a full percent below the national average in three-point percentage at 33%. They just keep chalking them. And now you go into Madison Square Garden, where, as I mentioned, it's historically been a tough shooting backdrop, whether it's the NIT, conference tournaments for the Big East, whatever the case may be. You know, it's been a tough shooting backdrop for teams. So I don't like that for Tennessee. The other thing I don't like for Tennessee is, now look, I mean, not only were they not great from three, they're basically an average team on two-point shots as well. And I know that Florida Atlantic hasn't played the same caliber of schedule, but they're a top 40 team in two-point percentage and three-point percentage. Bunch of guys are capable of creating shots here. Tennessee, of course, missing Zakai Ziegler still, their point guard, who had just a lot of assists throughout the course of the year, despite the fact they didn't make a whole lot of shots. I could definitely see FAU winning this game. I can also see FAU losing this game by double digits. I think it's a pretty high variance game. But that being said, I can never fault anybody for picking against Rick Barnes.
Your quote, you tweeted me after I tweeted on Thursday night that I was going to be on Tennessee. Friends don't let friends bet on Rick Barnes. Well, I did once and I'm off. You know, I got my victory. I'm happy.
The blind squirrel theory.
Yeah. By the way, it's very small sample size, but in the 5 games that Zakai Ziegler has not played for Tennessee, they are 87th in offensive efficiency. So it goes to show how much they're missing Zakai Ziegler. He's missed 5 full games. He got injured and tore his ACL early in that Arkansas game back on February 28th. And I just like the fact that, I'll tell you this, whichever team wins, Adam, whether it's Kansas State or Michigan State, their fans should stick around and cheer on FAU, because I think they give them a little bit of added juice there. So this game in Madison Square Garden, the nightcap on Thursday, a game that I think I might be in attendance. I'm hoping, pulling some strings here. It's the best game on paper of the Sweet 16. Gonzaga, UCLA, as producer Steven of this podcast let us know, this will be 17 years to the day of the Gonzaga collapse against UCLA in the Sweet 16. Adam Morrison also literally collapsed on the floor in tears. And then it's 2 years removed from Jalen Suggs, not to the day, half-court shot to win the game in overtime. So they've got some history in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, UCLA, the injuries are the big question here. We know there will be no Jalen Clark, which, you know, take a drink every time you hear UCLA will be without Jalen Clark. You might not last, you know, an hour because we talk about it a lot. But then there's the David Singleton situation. You know, is he going to be healthy? You know, rolled his ankle. Mick Cronin said it wasn't broken. He's not a massive piece to them, but he's their best three-point shooter, shooting at, you know, 42.5% from three. I'll say this, and I'll give credit to Matt on the previous podcast for pointing this out. I think if UCLA wins this game, they have to ugly it up. I think they have to kind of tough, you know, kind of push around a Gonzaga team, because we saw against TCU, Adam, when they get out and go, they are tough to beat, man. And there's a reason they've been the best offensive team in the country for the past 2 months of the season. And even per Bart Torvik, I think just the best team overall throughout the end of the season. So if UCLA is going to win shorthanded, they're going to have to muck this up. The market's actually backing UCLA, which I think is interesting. They're up to -2, total of 145.5. You can find a 146 at Circa. How do you look at this game, and is there a play for you on either side in UCLA Gonzaga?
Well, Matt's a smart guy. Don't let him know I said that. But Matt's a smart guy with what he was talking about with this game, because when you look at UCLA and you look at their losses this year, when they uglied it up against Arizona, those are the two games they lost, the conference tournament championship game and then also January 21st. Now, obviously, you know, you had Jalen Clark out, and Jalen Clark will be out again here. But the other games that they lost Illinois. Illinois was 12 of 25 from three in that game, 1.028 points per possession. Lost to Baylor. Baylor was 10 of 28 from three, 1.163 points per possession. And then the USC game on January 26th, Trojans 10 of 22 from three, 1.212 points per possession. So that's what it is. You know, that when they lose, it's largely going to be because the defense doesn't show up, and the other team is able to get out and run a little bit on them. And that's what Gonzaga will try to do in this game, and obviously has had tremendous success with, not only, you know, throughout this season, but pretty much throughout the tenure of Mark Few. If the injury to Jalen Clark is going to show up, this is the game where it will. David Singleton walking around without a limp. There was some video on social media here on Tuesday afternoon. They were on their way to LAX so that they could head into town here. And Singleton was walking just fine, and maybe that's one of the reasons why this line's kind of gone up to -2 now, with the expectation that he's actually going to be okay, and then, you know, that Adembona is also going to be all right for this game. But look, I mean, the thing that concerns me about UCLA, and it concerned me last year, it's concerned me on a lot of their tournament runs, they take a lot of mid-range jump shots. You know, Gonzaga's shot share, almost 40% at the rim. They're good from three, but they don't rely on them. UCLA, they don't take a lot of threes, and they take a lot of mid-range jumpers. I'm always scared of that if you're going to get a high-scoring game. If we don't, if UCLA slows this thing down, I think it's definitely to their benefit, as Matt alluded to. If they don't, then, you know, I'm kind of worried from a shot selection standpoint if UCLA can keep up, if they have to outscore the Bulldogs.
Drew Timmy in the second half against TCU was phenomenal. You know, doing everything, old man game, and I'm curious to see what Mick Cronin decides to do to slow down Drew Timmy, who I don't want to say he took the game over against TCU, because, you know, Rasir Bolton played really well in that second half too. Strother hit some big shots, but it goes through Drew Timmy. And if he's feeling it, if he's getting the crowd going, if he's putting his fingers through his, you know, Fu Manchu there, you know, that is going to be the unique aspect to this game, because I think Jalen Clark, once again, he would have been probably tasked with slowing down Drew Timmy. So I think UCLA, if the point spread is indicative of how this game plays out, where UCLA wins or it's close, I think it's low scoring. So I did play the game under. I tailed Matt on it under 146 here at Circa. Nothing more exciting to go to a game and a live sporting event, Matt or Adam, and be the guy in the crowd with the under ticket. Because that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that's never
I'm that
fun.
Guy.
Especially when there's going to be so much energy in the building for that game. But one thing I want to mention here, since we've wrapped up the Thursday games, I mean, Kansas State's the only one I've played here so far out of the Thursday slate. And I get it, and no one wants to hear this, but I'm going to say it anyway. These are big games. Everyone's watching them. You want action on them. I mean, these are such tight numbers, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, we saw the total come down for FAU and Tennessee. I think that's largely because of the Madison Square Garden factor. But other than that, you know, we're seeing very limited line movements. I don't think we see a whole lot in lead up to game time either. These are sharp numbers with a lot of data points and a lot of money pouring into the market to mold and shape these things. I get it. It's a Sweet 16, but, you know, use some discretion here when you're betting these.
Well, you look, you know, I'm going to pat ourselves on the back because I think the people that talk on this podcast are pretty smart and follow the sport pretty closely. And, you know, we had an up and down first weekend. You know, Matt and myself had a horrible Friday, bounced back with a solid Saturday. You know, overall kind of a meh weekend for me for four days where, you know, this is the weekend where everyone wants to jump in and bet these games. I get it, but it's challenging. That is for sure. All right, let's get to Friday. Louisville, Kentucky, 6:30 Eastern. Alabama, now your favorite, Adam, to win the national championship, around plus 350 at most shops, and they are taking on San Diego State. I am, as Samuel L. Jackson said in Jurassic Park, hold on to your butts, because I'm taking the dog here. I'm on San Diego State. You know, I think they are the outlier to the Mountain West. We talked about it on the program when we recorded last week. I had them against Charleston. Easy cover, never in doubt, right? Just needed a foul with 0.7 seconds to go in that one. But I also had them to get to the Sweet 16. And I think the way this bracket is, this might be their most difficult test before the championship game. And I say might because, look, Creighton is a unique aspect, assuming they get by Princeton and, you know, Tennessee with their defense and the familiarity with Alabama. But San Diego State is old, man. This is a veteran team. This is a team that is, you know, average Division I experience. It's one of the metrics on KenPom is around 3 years. Their whole starting lineup, their whole rotation is either juniors or seniors. And Alabama's the most talented team, I think, from top to, you know, rotation-wise, left in the field. Brandon Miller is the best player in the country. I do wonder that another venue, more eyeballs, more questions about everything that went down a couple weeks ago. Nick Saban's comments earlier this week, right at Nate Oates, saying there's no such thing as wrong place at a wrong place, wrong time. So that all being said, I just think this is an ugly game. Speaking of, I styles make fights, right? And San Diego State, they know you can't win this game running with Alabama. That's just not going to work. And these two teams really are drastically different with Alabama, how they want to go, some of the quickest possessions. Tempo is go, 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 go. San Diego State makes you work. 18.5 seconds per possession for their opponents, which is one of the longest in the country. So I'm going to take San Diego State here, one of the best defensive three-point shooting teams in the country, facing a team that shoots a ton of threes, but doesn't necessarily make a ton of threes. I think this is an ugly game. I think San Diego State probably doesn't have the firepower ultimately to win this game, Adam, but I'm going to take the points. There was an 8 out there. I took it earlier, but for the podcast purposes, 7.5 is available now. I'm rolling with the Aztecs here with the points.
Yeah, I'm thinking the under is the play in this game here, under 137, for kind of the same reasons that you outlined. I mean, for San Diego State, like you said, if they need to get in the 70s to win this game, they're not going to. They don't score. That's not really their style of play. I know they're borderline top 50 in offensive efficiency. That's fine. But they're 206th in the nation in two-point percentage offense, 174th in three-point percentage offense. They're not a good shooting team. And furthermore, the one area where they are a good shooting team, at the rim, they converted on close twos at almost 64%. Alabama is one of the top teams in the country in two-point percentage defense at the rim. Opponents made fewer than 50% of their layups, dunks, and tip-ins against this Alabama defense. So I don't know how San Diego State scores a lot of points in this game, but I do think, again, an unfamiliar venue, a good three-point defense, a team that's going to sell out to prevent the three, I think San Diego State can have some success defensively in this game and also probably slow it down a little bit. So I like under 137 in this one. Not going to get a whole lot of turnovers from Alabama. They don't force a lot of turnovers, which is going to slow this game down. The battle on the boards will be really interesting. But, you know, I think that maybe that's something that we haven't necessarily seen
from Alabama, something that they really haven't had to pull out that much. They're a top five team in 2-point and 3-point percentage defense. They're third in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency. I think they locked down in this game, so I like the under 137. But I could see, you know, again,
hopefully lower, it's correlated.
Lower scoring game, yeah. Getting 7.5. You know, if it's a slower paced game, then you know, hopefully we both win this one.
Yeah, and once again, Matt on the previous podcast is agreeing with both of us. He said he's going to split a unit, take under and the points. So hopefully we're all happy, and it's a low scoring slog that San Diego State either wins outright, because honestly that would be beneficial towards my Houston future. And my Creighton future. So, you know, go Aztecs. Let's pull the outright upset here. All right. Over to Kansas City, where we've got Miami and Houston. Miami. Still mad at them. Not mad at them. I'm mad at Drake. 16-1 run to close out the game. 55-47. Drake absolutely collapses as Miami has no timeouts left. And Drake looked like there might... Now, use your imagination. There was just some stuff coming out from the backside of them. Tucker DeVries, 1 of 13. And then Miami played really well against Indiana. Every time Indiana threw a run at them, they had a response. My question about this game, Adam, I do think the extra day of rest is beneficial to Houston because of the injuries they've been dealing with, even though Marcus Sasser looked just fine in the second half against Auburn. Did Houston wake up in that second half against Auburn? Play to their capabilities? And secondly, is Houston just a better version of Miami? Very guard-oriented team heading into this game, because the number's pretty high, and I would, you know, just based off of early betting splits that are out there, it does feel like the public likes the dog here in this spot.
I like the dog, so I don't know if I'm part of the public here or not.
But I haven't bet it, so I just need Houston to win.
I think here, you know, in this game, but before I answer your questions, the reason why I like Miami in this game, I mean, the AAC, and look, Houston is part of it because their defensive numbers were so good. But no team in the American Athletic Conference ranks in the top 100 in three-point percentage or in the top 55 in two-point percentage. And Miami's a team here that's top 35 in both. So Houston really hasn't seen many good offenses throughout the course of the season, and they didn't see many in non-conference play either. Miami can score from anywhere on the floor, and I think that's something that could hurt Houston a little bit in this game. So I do think Miami can score. Can they get stops? That's a very fair question to ask. But I think getting the points here in this game, I do like Miami plus 7. To your question about Houston, I mean, the metrics have loved them all year long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like that top gear for them, like what we saw in the second half against Auburn, maybe that is just kind of been hanging around there. But I don't think that they've really seen an offense that's this quick, you know, that's able to do some of the things that Miami is able to do. I guess you could say Memphis possibly. And, you know, those were games where Houston kind of struggled a little bit during the regular season. They had a 2-point win over Memphis in the finale, the 8-point win at home, where that was a game, you know, kind of for a while, and then, of course, lost in the AAC tournament, which, again, Sasser being hurt and all that. But, you know, I think Jim Larrañaga is a really good head coach. I think the fact that Miami has multiple days to break this down instead of the, you know, Thursday to Saturday or Friday to Sunday turnaround benefits them. I picked Houston to win it all, so I certainly respect and understand the potential of this team, but I think Miami is going to find a way to crack the code and score a little bit. So I went ahead and took them plus the 7.5 here.
I'll say this. Norchad Omier, who got hurt against Duke, played just 1 minute, rolled the ankle, played against Drake, had 12 points and 14 rebounds, and then against Indiana, 7 points. But he's just he's the toughness that team needs, a guard-oriented team. He had 17 rebounds, 8 offensive rebounds against Indiana. That's going to be massive because this is a Houston team that will attack. On the offensive glass. So there was a 6.5. It got scooped up, I would say early Tuesday. Circa, I think, had the 6.5. Yeah, looks like that got scooped up around 7:40 on Tuesday morning. So we'll see if this line moves at all. But right now, Houston laying 7 with a total of 138 against Miami.
And the last thing, too, I mean, you know, if Miami isn't giving up a million offensive rebounds, and it could be a big if in this game, they'll want to get out and run a little bit in transition, and not many teams have been able to do that to Houston because the Cougars are top 5 in offensive rebounding percentage, because they're just aren't a lot of teams that effectively or efficiently can speed up the pace in the American Athletic. I think there are some stylistic things here that Houston hasn't been exposed to a whole lot that I think could benefit the Hurricanes.
Two more games on Friday night, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern at the KFC Yum Center. Creighton laying 10 against the surprise of the tournament. There was a prop out there, and I didn't catch what the odds were. I believe it was at the Westgate Superbook. Which double-digit seed will last the longest? Your answer, your winner, Princeton. The 15 seed, second straight year, a 15 seed, and both of them coming from the state of New Jersey, ironically enough. Princeton catching 10 here with a total of 140. And, you know, for Creighton, they played really well against Baylor. That was an impressive performance, one of the more impressive performances, in my opinion, of the first weekend of the tournament. And Creighton, you know, is playing to the potential that we saw at glimpses when they had that, you know, 8-game winning streak in late January to early February. And then they hit a bit of a skid. This is a roller coaster ride of a team. They've got size, they've got shooters. Princeton, though, they beat Arizona, didn't really play well offensively, and then they dictated that entire Missouri game. So is this a spot where it's too many points here with Princeton catching 10?
It's a game I want no part of. But I will say, I mean, the thing I think is really fascinating about what Princeton did to Missouri, they doubled them up in offensive rebounds, 16-8, which I think is a really impressive thing for a variety of different reasons for this Princeton team, not the least of which being they weren't that good of an offensive rebounding team during the regular season. These are two top 15 teams in offensive rebounding percentage against, so maybe we don't get a whole lot of second chance points in this game. Neither team forces turnovers. They both play at a similar tempo. If I had to do anything with this game, as odd as this may seem because of what Princeton's offense has done here, specifically against Missouri, I think the under might be the look in this game, but I don't want to bet anything in this one. I mean, I think Creighton's really, really good, and the best of Creighton is good enough to cover this number. I don't know if we get the best of Creighton, though. So, yeah. Tough handicap.
I agree. Creighton would be a spot. Look, I have a future on Creighton. I hit the spot where everybody was hitting earlier over the summer, and then I actually took a little of them to make the Final Four before the bracket drew. I like the odds that they had. I think it was like 14-1. So we'll see. I'm not hedging yet. I think they win. And, you know, we were talking about with Matt, do you put Creighton in a money line parlay? Maybe, but it's -$5. You're not really getting a great spot to pair them with anybody.
I will say this. I think there's kind of an argument, and I'm curious where you fall on this. You know, you're Princeton, right? And you beat Arizona and Missouri, and you have this phenomenal first weekend. You want to keep playing. Right, you don't want to go back home, practice for a few days. Mm-hmm. You know, you're moving around campus, and everyone's dapping you up and all that kind of thing. Like, I think there's a reason why sometimes you get these upstarts that get to the Sweet 16 and then just completely fall flat in that game. You want to keep playing. You're in rhythm. You're feeling good. Now you go home, practice, try to keep up that intensity. Try not to let it all get to your head when you're back on campus and you're a celebrity and all that. That would be a worry for me, I think, about Princeton in this game. And I don't know if it necessarily leads to a betting angle, but I'm just curious your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it's funny because normally that's kind of the way this has played out historically, but St. Peter's bucked that trend last year. But maybe that was the outlier because, you know, they played Purdue, and Purdue stinks against high-seeded teams. That's just what they do.
Good old Matt Painter.
all right, wrapping it up here on Friday, Xavier and Texas. Where we sit right now at Circa on this Tuesday afternoon, Circa has added a hook. They are the only place, at least I see in the market, Adam, that has a hook. Texas 4.5 here at Circa, 4 across the board, a total of 149. Xavier, this is I'm kicking myself a little bit. I was over the weekend because after they survived Kennesaw State, very, very fortunately, and Jack Nungy was the hero with that blocked shot. They played Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, who played in one of the ugliest games of recent memory in the NCAA tournament against Iowa State. And everybody thought Pittsburgh, oh, that's too many points. You know, they'd almost lost to Kennesaw State. It was the classic overreaction spot from what we saw in the first round. and they controlled Pittsburgh from start to finish. Is this, and I know we've been asking this question a lot, is this finally when the rubber meets the road where you're like, you know what? Xavier is missing one of their best players. Zach Fremantle has been gone for what, about a month, month and a half? I know they lost to Marquette in the championship game, really wasn't all that competitive in the Big East tournament. Texas just has dudes all over the place. Sule Boom is maybe the best transfer in college basketball this past year, and he really hasn't shot all that well, just 2 of 12 from 3 in this NCAA tournament. I mean, he's a, you know, a 40-plus percent three-point shooter, so does his norm come back a little bit? You mentioned Creighton Tech, Princeton, a game that you want nothing to do with. I don't really want much to do with this game. I lean towards Texas a little bit, but that number is fascinating to me. It seems suspiciously short, and I think a lot of people are going to be racing to take Texas because they think the Longhorns are on sale. I just, that number is telling me something, so that's what's kind of spooking me about this spot.
Well, this is my favorite bet of the turn of the Sweet 16 here. So I like Texas.
There we go.
I like Texas a lot in this game. And by the way, I mean, you know, Haslametrics has this game Texas minus 3.2. Bart Torvik has it Texas minus 3.8. So it kind of falls in line with what the ranking sites have to say in terms of this line being at 4. Few things here. First, Texas is very familiar with this city, this venue. They play here every year in the Big 12 tournament. They just won the Big 12 tournament here a few weeks ago. So like that familiarity kind of helps them out here in this situation. Also, I would presume they travel much better than Xavier does to this game. Also, I saw a headline about this. I didn't read the article, shame on me, but I did see a headline about this that Texas wants the interim tag taken off of Rodney Terry. You win this game, that happens, without a doubt, at least in my opinion. So that's another thing here, too. They're kind of playing
well, Billy Donovan or, you know, Jesus Christ. Someone might be someone. I mean, because that's who Texas thinks is going to be the head coach there.
Do you think Jesus Christ would be a good basketball coach?
I don't know. He plays in sandals. It'd be kind of weird.
Oh, it'd be a good question. Be a really good question. It'd be turning water into wine on the bench. Everyone would be drunk. I don't know how that would go.
Yeah.
But look, Texas, a team top 20 in both adjusted offensive and defensive efficiency. I don't think Xavier is that good of a defensive team. This is a game where, as you mentioned, the absence of Fremantle could end up being a bit of an issue. And the other thing here for Xavier is, you know, they're a top 5 team in 3-point percentage. But over the last 6 games, Texas has been really, really good. They've held teams to 27% from 3 during the 6-game winning streak, including, obviously, their run to the Big 12 Conference Championship. They had some issues defensively at times right after Rodney Terry took over, after the whole Chris Beard thing. But for the most part, this has been a quality defensive team, and they're playing their best defense at the most important time of the year. Texas is my favorite play here. I took the -4 on Sunday night, wrote about it in the article over VSiN.com. I think the Longhorns move on here.
I did play a Texas-Houston moneyline parlay at +113. So that was the way I rolled. By the way, you mentioned that 6-game winning streak. Short sample size, but sometimes I just get obsessed of sorting things at Bart Torvik. Texas, since that winning streak has started, which was on March 4th, they are the best team in the country over those 6 games. Number 1 in the country, ahead of Alabama, Duke, UConn, and Gonzaga. All right, let's wrap this thing up with our best bet recap.
Best bet recap.
All right, Adam, I'll go quickly. I hit on it with Matt, but for those who missed it there, I am on FAU. I was able to get 6 for the podcast purposes. That number is not available. We'll roll +5.5. I'm on San Diego State plus the 7.5. I tailed Matt Eumanns on the under in Gonzaga UCLA. And I'll throw this in there. Why not? Because I actually bet it. I think Houston and Texas take care of business, set up an all-Texas showdown in Kansas City in the Elite Eight. So a little money line parlay that's at +113. Your best bets for the Sweet 16.
Yeah, so I mentioned in the article on Sunday night when I put it up that I liked Kansas State, but I said I think you can wait on this line and get a little bit better of a price. That has happened now. So I did take Kansas State plus the 2 as opposed to the +1 that's in the article. Do like Texas -4 as well. And then, you know, I think that the under that we talked about in the
San Diego State,
the San Diego State Alabama game. I haven't played that yet, but I think that's going to be one that's added to my card here as well. And you know, look, again, I mean,
you like Houston, you like Miami a little bit too.
I do like Miami. Yeah, I took Miami as well, plus the 7.5. So It kind of concerns me when there's eight games and I want to take a piece of four of them after what I said earlier about, you know, hey, these are like tightly lined games. But, you know, you also have a lot more time to break down the matchups. I'm used to writing the daily article where I'm handicapping 40, 50, 60, 100 plus games. Here, I only have to handicap eight. So, you know, you look for little edges, little opportunities that are out there. And maybe there are some, maybe there aren't. But, you know, I do think that, you know, as we kind of whittle down the rest of the season here, things will continue to get tighter and sharper out there.
All right. Just a reminder, the VSIN College Basketball Betting Podcast, we will have another episode on Friday in your feed, reacting to the Thursday games in the Sweet 16 and giving you a quick preview of the Elite Eight. We'll have another podcast, TBD on the timing, but probably sometime Saturday morning, reacting to the Friday games with a quick look ahead to the Sunday Elite Eight game. So rate, review, and subscribe. We'll, of course, have plenty of Final Four analysis come next week. Also, head over to vsin.com for all of our best bets, all the written content. Adam's been doing a great job, as has many others over there. So rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, let the world know about the VSIN College Basketball Betting Podcast. For Adam Burke, you can follow him on Twitter at Skating Tripods. I'm Tim Murray. Follow me at One Tim Murray. We will talk to you later this week right here on the VSIN College Basketball Betting Podcast.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.